This is the Bates Bobcast, our weekly podcast about the week that was in Bates Athletics. My name is Aaron Morse, and we're celebrating the start of the new year with a look at our basketball teams. As the men's and women's teams are combined 22-2 entering NESCAC play, which starts this Friday against Amherst. Plus, our Hall of Fame interview series continues with two-time Olympian Nancy Ingersoll Fiddler from the class of 1978. That's coming up on the Bates Bobcast. The women's basketball team is 11-1 and ranked 13th in the country by D3Hoops.com and 12th by the Women's Basketball Coaches Association. The Bobcats went 5-0 since our last episode of the Bobcast, with wins over Central and Emmanuel at the Cruisin' Classic in Florida and back-to-back victories over Roger Williams and Hunter at the WPI Winter Invitational. Tossing a 74-51 win at UMass Dartmouth on Saturday, and the Bobcats are on a roll entering NESCAC play. Senior captain Elsa Delario was named the MVP of the WPI Winter Invitational, and she is averaging 13.1 points per game and a team-high 7.6 rebounds per game. And Elsa Delario is our female Bobcat of the week.
Well, Elsa, you know, undefeated holiday break for the women's basketball team. Let's start the trip to Florida. Some low-scoring battles down there. How are you able to grind out those wins?
Those were definitely a battle and very low-scoring. I think our shooting percentages in both games weren't that great. But I think we made a real good adjustment in the Emmanuel game and just being a lot more, like, honest with each other on the court, holding each other accountable. That was really huge for us in that second game. And always just to refocus ourselves on our defense and our chemistry. So I think that really helped us and helped us make that adjustment and get those wins.
It seems like it carried over the success in the WPI Winter Invitational. You got MVP. It looks like you got a little trophy. How cool was that?
Yeah. That was cool. I didn't really expect that, but yeah, I really appreciated it. It was nice.
What was clicking on the floor in those wins? Convincing victories.
Yeah, I think it all came from our defense and our transition. I think it finally has been kind of clicking for us that we can play to our full potential. And we've been working on our defense and stuff like deflections and rebounding and steals. Like we usually don't get a lot of steals in those two games at that WPI tournament. We really turned that on, and it helped our offense a lot. So I think that was huge and something that we've been working on all season. It's just been working out super well. So really happy to see the team do that very well.
And in the most recent game at UMass Dartmouth, they're a different team this year, but a team that did beat you last year. So was that on your mind at all going in?
Oh, it was. Yeah. Yes. I was still pretty angry from that loss in overtime last year. Yeah. But we did talk about that in our pregame. We're like, let's get fired up because we knew that that was on their mind too. So just to come out with a lot of fire like we did. And again, I think just translating our defensive focus to our offense was huge in that game.
We got NESCAC play finally, right? Long non-conference, you're 11-1. Amherst coming to town. Both teams are nationally ranked. Amherst is always a physical contest, isn't it? It can be a grind, right?
Yep, yeah. It's going to be a big grind. And I think, you know, thinking about the way we ended NESCAC's last year against Amherst, that's going to be huge. But we're super hungry and coming off with just some good confidence off of these last three games. And like I said, just seeing how we can play to our potential. So really excited to play Amherst and Hamilton, both really good teams. And yeah, it's battle, it's physical. So yeah, we're super excited and confident going into these games.
Obviously, last year's team was able to bounce back from an 0-4 start and finish 6-4 in NESCAC, but obviously you don't want to have to try to do that again, right?
Right, definitely not. We want to get off to a hot start.
Yeah. Any tips from Lily Lambeau going up against Taylor Lambeau on Sunday, right?
Yeah, that's always super fun. Yeah, I like that matchup, me and Taylor Lambeau, because I'm like, I'm thinking about Lily on the court. But, yeah, that's always super fun. And they've had a great season so far, too, I think. So both teams are going to challenge us, and we just want to play to our potential and work on everything that we've been working on this season, just putting it all together.
All right, sounds good. Elsa Delario, Female Bobcat of the Week. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Aaron.
The men's basketball team is also 11-1 and just defeated rival Colby on Sunday by a score of 90-72 at Alumni Gym. They traveled to Atlanta over winter break, where they picked up a win over then number 25 nationally ranked Maryville. The Bobcats, who are receiving votes in the D3Hoops.com Top 25 poll, are led in scoring and rebounding this year by junior Babacar Pui, who is averaging 15.3 points per game and 9.5 rebounds per game. He has tallied back-to-back double-doubles, including 25 points and 11 rebounds against the Mules. And Babacar Pui is our male Bobcat of the Week. Well, Babacar, we got the chance to speak right after the game against Colby there on Sunday. Obviously, you know, with some time to reflect on that huge second half, you guys outscoring them 52-29. What are your thoughts on how this team was able to really just pull away from a rival like that and really make a statement kind of victory, right?
Yeah, I'm really proud of our guys. I think we really dug in the second half and focused on the things that we needed to do. I think we swung the ball a lot better. We rebounded a lot harder, and I feel like those are the kind of the separators, you know, just playing harder. So I feel like that's kind of what really got us going. And, you know, digging in on defense especially, not letting your game kind of be dictated by whether or not you're scoring on offense. So getting things going on defense really helped us out there.
Yeah, it helps when the shots start falling, right?
That's no, for sure.
Sometimes it's as simple as that. But, I mean, with NESCAC play coming up, you guys are on the road for quite a bit here. I mean, it's going to be a nice little test to start NESCAC play. You know, we love Alumni Gym, but you have what? Some non-conference games also, but five of your next six games on the road. What are your thoughts about hitting the road here?
I'm not too worried about it. I feel like, you know, so far this year, being able to go other places, get wins, you know, come back like it's nothing. So I think we'll be able to handle it. Also, it's winter break, so, I mean, they're not really going to have any crazy crowds, which I'm not even worried about in the first place. But, won't be too bad. I think we'll be ready to handle it, any type of adversity that comes our way.
Amherst, we've had some heartbreakers against them in recent years. I mean, they're your NESCAC opener. I mean, this is going to be a nice matchup to start NESCAC play, right?
No, for sure. I think as long as we play our brand of basketball like we did that second half against Colby, play hard, rebound hard, do all those sorts of things, I really can't see too many NESCAC teams really getting the edge on us. So I think it'll be a good battle, but I feel like, you know, we play our game, we do what we need to do. I think we should be able to come out this weekend with two wins.
You touched on this after the game the other day, you know, how, you know, in your two seasons, I didn't realize it's only one NESCAC win in your two seasons.
Yeah.
I mean, and because you've beaten some Bowdoin and Colby in, like, non-conference games. But, I mean, like, teams got to be pretty hungry, right? I mean, like,
and
confident after this big start, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think this is really – it's a big motivating factor, you know, that we've kind of been overlooked, disrespected, I feel like, in terms of, you know, like our standing in the NESCAC. But I feel like, you know, people are starting to wake up and realizing that we're building something here. And I feel like they really get to see our point and see what we've built here after a couple NESCAC games.
Now, you're a junior, but, I mean, have you noticed the seniors feeling like, oh, this is our last year, kind of like, let's make the most of it? What have you seen from those guys?
Yeah, for sure. I feel like a lot of our seniors have, like, really, like, amped it up this year, especially, I feel like, Brady Coyne and Elliot. I feel like they've both really stepped up in their respective manners. I feel like Elliot's really been great on defense, you know, locking up some of the other team's best guys. And I feel like, I don't know, sometimes he just moves in ways where I'm like, dang, like, how is he, like, getting his feet there, staying balanced, you know? Great defense from Elliot. I've been loving to see it so far this season. But yeah, rest of the seniors, you know, David, Shaware, Aiden Gideon Hope, they've all been like really producing with like the minutes they get, and like you know, I feel like everyone's bringing a lot of value to the team in different ways that they can.
I know you take pride in your shot blocking, six blocks the other day. That block by Shaware was insane, though. It was like a spike almost.
That was crazy.
What was your point of view on that one?
I was like, dang. I mean, honestly, I'm used to seeing Shaware do stuff like that. He's blocked me like that a couple of times, so it wasn't anything too out of the ordinary, but that got me hyped. That was a great block.
You guys went to the Celtics game last night, is that right?
We did, yeah.
Nice. What was that experience like? I know you guys have been there a few times, right?
Yeah, it was pretty fun. Got to see him play the Bulls. Wasn't a very close game from start to finish, but it was always great seeing some NBA basketball.
Growing up in California, what was your team kind of?
I was always a Lakers guy.
Yeah.
Always a Lakers guy. But my favorite player is Joel Embiid. Mm-hmm. So I always root for the Sixers a little bit.
Why Joel Embiid? Do you try to model your game after him?
A little bit. Yeah. I feel like he was just one of, like, not, like, just kind of my generation, the first, like, big African superstar. Mm-hmm. So I always loved him for that. And he was always, like, kind of a jokester, kind of a troll. So I loved that in middle school. So he was my favorite player since then.
Nice, nice. And then you mentioned the Lakers. I mean, you're not that young. Kobe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, was that?
No, not really.
No,
He kind of retired, like, the year
you,
I started.
You are
basketball.
That young. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So who were the Lakers guys you followed?
Back when it was, like, Jordan Clarkson, okay. Josh Hart, Brandon Ingram, like, the Lonzo Ball, like, that young core.
Okay.
core but
yeah.
Sadly lost them, but they're all doing well now. But that's when I first started following them.
Yeah, now that LeBron's there, right? What's that
yeah.
like?
I don't love it a lot. It's kind of been controversial. Some people hate it, some people love it. I feel like sometimes it does kind of get away from basketball, having, like, I don't know. It can get a little bit, like, hectic with, like, I don't know. Overall, I don't love it. Right, as of right now, at least. I feel like we need to get LeBron off the floor sometimes. But
well, he's up there now. What, he's 40-something?
I know, it's like 42, I think. But can't blame him, honestly.
I mean, he's one of the few professional athletes who's older than me. So I admire that.
Yeah.
But well, I mean, just looking at the season going forward, we mentioned, you know, some of the road games we have coming up. But, I mean, in terms of NESCAC play, based on your past 2 years, how do things change? What's the style like in conference compared to maybe out of conference games?
In conference, it's more so I feel like you need to really be keyed in onto your scout and, like, knowing who guys are, knowing where you can help, and, like, knowing who you need to stay tight to, who you can gap off of, plays like that. And honestly, just, like, really bring in the energy, because any NESCAC team can, like, come out and get a win. You know, last year we took it to the wire with number one Wesleyan. Yeah. Kind of just shows the versatility of every NESCAC team. So if you don't come ready to play, you're not going to come out with a win, so... I feel like as long as you come ready to play hard, do your thing, it shouldn't, like, you should get the result that you want, that you're looking for.
Certainly. And then, I mean, I want to ask you a little bit about, you know, playing for Coach Furbush and Zach, the assistant, who's his second year now this year, right?
Mm.
And so what's it like working with them?
It's honestly pretty good. I feel like we have a great dynamic. I feel like Coach Zach's always trying to keep us in line and making sure that we're doing things that we need supposed to do. Yeah, his intensity definitely wakes us all up and makes sure that we're always locked in and ready to go. And Coach Ferbers, I feel like he kind of makes sure that we're keyed in on the things we need to be keyed in on too. So a lot of time when our effort's not there, you know, he'll just break it down for us and, like, you know, really get honest about that. So I feel like everyone kind of brings their own respective parts that really brings our team together.
I know last time you gave a shout out Pittman Alley and Joe Rooney, the two students, assistants, basically. What do they bring?
They bring a lot of energy, honestly. Yeah. Sometimes on our live streams, you can see Pittman on the edge of the bench going crazy with that binders. So I feel like they just bring a lot of energy, and I feel like they help things run a lot smoothly, you know, helping us with our warm-up pregame, you know, ordering meals and stuff like that. So I feel like they've helped this program, like, run a lot smoother, and I really appreciate them for that.
You're a junior, but because we're going to be renovating the area between Alumni Gym and Gray Cage, the team will be playing Underhill. So this is your kind of last year in Alumni as a player. What are your thoughts on that kind of?
It's a little heartbreaking. Yeah. I wish I could have had a senior year in Alumni. But, you know, I try not to think about it too much.
Yeah.
But even though I feel like I should, you know, kind of try to make it a little special. But it's a little tough. But I feel like it's exciting, though. It's a special gym, so. I think me and the guy was trying to cherish it one last time and, you know, come out hot in our last running Alumni.
And you have. You're 6-0 at home right now.
Yes, sir.
11-1 overall. I mean, 11-1, that is such a great start to the season. And it matches the best start in program history. I mean, what does that mean to you to, you know, be making this history right now?
Honestly, it means a lot. I feel like when I came out here, that's really what my goal was. And, you know, it took some time to build it. But I feel like I'm just really grateful that we're here. And I feel like I'm really grateful to our coaches for helping us build this. And grateful to my teammates for really buying in and, like, getting us to get this far so far.
Statistically, I know it's all about wins and losses, but I did want to point out that, and you probably know this, you're almost averaging a double-double right now. 9.5 rebounds per game. Is that your goal, kind of average a double-double? Is that something?
Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't want that?
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, I'm going for it. You said 9.5?
9.5 right now.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll be able to get over the edge this weekend against Amherst and Hamilton. But, yeah, definitely going for that. It's definitely something I want to be going for.
And you dish out a lot of assists, too. I mean, you're second on the team in assists right now. What are you seeing on the court?
I feel like I draw a lot of gravity whenever I get the ball in the paint mm-hmm. or on the wing. So, you know, I feel like I'm good at slinging the ball with my right hand. So it's super easy to just get those cross-court passes or, you know, when people aren't looking, just sling it right by them. Yeah, I just love that part of the game.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're able to do something I could never imagine doing. It's palming the basketball, right? I mean, you're able to just...
I actually can't palm the basketball.
Interesting. It looks yeah. like you do, though.
Really, yeah.
I mean, with those one-handed passes.
Mm-hmm. My hand, like, I have, like, a weirdly shaped thumb, actually. Uh-huh. So I was never really able to palm basketball.
Interesting. So how do you make those passes, then?
I kind of just got to, like, get the ball, like, on the right spot of my hand and just, like, kind of shove it out there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like you're palming it.
I'll take that. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, those one-handed passes, how much have you worked on those? Because it's a good weapon, it seems like.
I haven't worked on it too much. I just feel like it's kind of just come with, like, the flow of the game as I've, like, gotten more and more. You know, I feel like... When I was younger, I wasn't, like, super good. I feel like the one thing I had was, like, a right-handed, like, hook. So that kind of, I feel like, translated into, like, some of the more, like, right-handed stuff I can do, like, make those passes. And, yeah, it's pretty much that.
Gotcha. Well, any other thoughts you wanted to share on, you know, the games you had over the winter break? Obviously, the bounce-back win over Maryville, dominating wins at home over Thomas and Maine Maritime. Anything else you wanted to mention we haven't got to talk about yet?
Not really. I feel like I'm just super proud of my team and our guys for, like, buying in and just, you know, taking things every day super seriously. You know, it takes a lot. So I feel like be 11-1. A lot of stuff goes on behind the scenes. A lot of great scouts by Coach Zach. Appreciate you, Coach Zach, if you're listening to this. A lot of great preparation. So yeah, just shout out to everybody on the team for doing their thing. Also shout out to Base Communications for having great coverage and great announcing. I feel like I gotta give you points for this. I feel like I haven't come on here. I've been on here a couple of times. I haven't come on here and told you. You're one of the best announcers I've ever heard in my life.
I'm trying
to give you those brownie points.
I really appreciate that. Next time you're at the Celtics game, let them know. No, I'm kidding. I love it here. We're all excited about Bates Fins basketball. Obviously, I love doing the home games. Not too many home games right now, but we'll have a bunch later on down the stretch, which will be really exciting, especially with the you know, the likes of Tufts coming to town for senior day, Williams, Middlebury, stuff like that. But, folks, if you want to follow the Bobcats, they're at Amherst Friday at 7 o'clock. Then they're at Hamilton Sunday at 1. Our next home broadcast of Bates Men's Basketball, Friday, January 16th, the NESCAC rivalry matchup against Bowdoin. Hopefully a little higher scoring than last time. That'd be fun for everyone, I think. But, Babacar, thanks so much. Congratulations. Male Bobcat of the Week. Thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
The Nordic skiing team is in Lake Placid, New York this week for the St. Lawrence Carnival, which is doubling as the U.S. Cross Country Nationals this year. They got things started with the 10K Classic on Sunday and are in action Tuesday as well, competing in freestyle sprints. In recognition of the start of the Nordic skiing season, we continue our Hall of Fame interview series this week with Nancy Ingersoll Fiddler from the class of 1978, an all-American Nordic skier at Bates who never lost a race. Nancy went on to be a two-time Olympian, but that's just the start of her remarkable story. Well, Nancy, it's great to have you here in person in the studio for our Hall of Fame Bobcast interview, and tell me a little bit about what it was like to be there with your fellow inductees.
Oh, it was a tremendous honor to be in the ceremony. Yeah, I really felt the importance of it for the history of Bates Athletics, and to be part of it was kind of really, you know, it was an amazing experience. I was surprised to see my name on the inductee list, and I felt pretty good about that. And then I kind of worried, wow, am I enough? But when I got on stage, I was like, yeah, these people were all like kind of a tribe and represent different sports, and we all came from really interesting stories to our athletic careers at Bates too. So it wasn't really it's not really a slam dunk for any of those people to be on that stage.
And tell me a little bit about what it was like sharing the stage with your former coach, Coach Yak.
That was really nice. I have a great deal of affection for her and always never forgot her during, you know, the passing years. And she was always Coach Yak and very solid memory. I only played hockey for a couple seasons, but I recognized in her coaching a great person and somebody who was a contributor here at Bates. And really, for a woman coach at a school at that time when Title IX was going into effect, she was very modern and grabbed the opportunities as they came up. And I know she worked very, very hard.
I want to talk more about you influencing the start of two programs, right? Women's cross country, women's lacrosse. How did that come about? Take us back to those days and why you'd all decided these have to happen, right?
First, it was lacrosse because, like many high schools, especially down in the Massachusetts areas, there were already more like strong programming for women's athletics than there were at Bates at the time. Mm. So some of my field hockey teammates and I were going to miss playing lacrosse in the spring. And so we put our heads together and we said, would it be possible to do this? It's not a sport. We don't have a coach who can coach lacrosse. But we were determined to see if we could make it work. And I honestly, at the time, I wasn't even really sure about, I didn't really know much about Title IX. Mm. But when we went to ask, it was more than possible to make a club happen. And I remember someone went out and got some, I believe they were used lacrosse sticks, and they were the old wood catgut situation. And we got them and we went out, and I think Coach Yakawanis was learning the ropes, and we had some athletes from field hockey, and there were maybe four of us who already knew how to play, and we coached the team along, and we went to some games, and we got beaten very badly. But we were having fun.
Yeah.
You know, it was a really fun time. And so then it was nothing really to go to the athletic director and say, hey, we've got women who will do this. And there aren't that many sports for women. And there were only three varsity sports at the time.
Yeah.
So if you didn't play tennis in the spring, you were sitting on your hands. So we went to the athletic director, Hatch, Bob Hatch, and he was more than willing to put it through for us. And the next year, it was a varsity program. And with running, you know, they started the indoor track was, I think, the first running program for women. And some of my teammates did that. And I got into skiing, right, which was just beginning too. And cross country, I think it was my junior year. And I think I'd made the decision, oh, I don't think I'm going to do the team sports anymore. I want to train for skiing. Even though we didn't really have like a program to do fall training or any of that, I said, oh, well, cross-country running would be good,
right,
because it's a fitness thing and it's probably better for me than hockey. So, and my brother was running cross-country and I knew about it. I knew about it, but I had never done it. So we went and put that together, and I remember going down to Boston and running in a legs mini marathon 10K. Remember doing that. And then we did some racing as a club too, same thing. And I think the program got varsity status not that long after. And I think I was in the first women's NESCAC meet. I found a old set of results somewhere, and it showed, and I'm like, I barely know how to run, and I was like in the top five, I think, but it was and that was a lot of fun too. And we didn't really have a coach. I remember there a coach named Gloria back then.
Gloria Crosby?
Yes.
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 Do you remember much about her?
No, she had blonde hair.
Okay. Yeah.
But she was a real fighter too.
Yeah.
She was all for women's sports, and she was like, don't mess with her. She's going to make this happen.
And then Pat Smith for lacrosse?
Pat Smith.
Yeah.
She coached hockey with Sherry.
Okay.
Yeah, as an assistant. And then she helped out with the lacrosse, too.
Strong group of women leaders.
Yes. Yeah. And they were very much instrumental in my picture of becoming a coach. I wanted to. I had really good, strong coaches in high school and in college as well. And I was like, wow, these women make things happen, and they influence people in the best kind of way.
Yeah.
I mean, they're hard. I like a hard coach, but so I like that. It was just women role models, and my Nordic coaches were men.
Right.
There was no such thing as a woman ski coach back then, probably. But yeah, they were very great too. So
yeah, you mentioned you became a women's ski coach. Down the line, right?
Yes. I coached for 30 years in Mammoth Lakes. When I retired from skiing, I was a little at loose ends, and there were no ski programs at all in the town. It's mostly alpine skiing and snowboarding, big mountain there. And so I was like, wow, we have a perfectly nice set of tracks and we have long season. And I went to the schools and I started, you know, rapping on principals and athletic directors' doors. And they let me start a little ragtag group of skiers. I basically went into the halls and I was holding up a sign, you know, anybody want to try Nordic skiing? And I just got the craziest group of kids. Got them all out there. But then, yeah, so then we built school program. Then we built a club program. I built a ski PE program for kids to get on a bus from elementary school and also a younger kids after school program and a master's program. So I really dove into bringing my skiing knowledge back to my community. And it ended up, well, I'll just do this a little bit, but it ended up consuming sort of my best years.
Was there a point where you realized that skiing was going to be a true singular passion of yours? Because, you mentioned before, you'd never been on skis before Bates.
Well, I'd done alpine skiing as a kid.
Right, okay, yeah.
But I got out there, and it was something about the movement. Mm. It just really felt, I don't know, I felt like I had gone home. You know, I was like in my body, and that I was obviously struggling to learn it, but it made sense to me physically, and I liked that challenge, you know, like, okay, you're just going to go hard but back then we did like 5K. So like a 20 minutes hard, this is something I really can put my teeth into. And anyway, yeah, so I liked it enough that after I left the sport after Bates for 6 years, 7 years, and came back, it was still in me. I just hadn't figured out how to work it all through. So,
and I wanted to mention this because, yeah, it's almost unprecedented. I don't hear very many stories of people doing a sport in college, stopping the sport for 8 years, coming back at age 30 and becoming an Olympian. That doesn't happen, like, ever. How did this happen for you?
Well, I stuck it out for a couple years.
Okay.
You know, I was on a little bit of a regional development program, which was very loosely run, and I honestly didn't know how to train year-round because we didn't really have that at Bates either.
Right.
That wasn't, you know, ski season started, and then it ended, and then you were on your own. And so I kind of just got with friends and tried to figure it out, and I had, you know, some guidance from a few coaches who saw my ability, but the funding wasn't there. You know, I was like at the, like almost ready to like make a funded team. And I never was there. I'd only been skiing 3 years and I got down on myself because it's like, oh, well, I'm not good enough. So I'm just going to leave it. And really, I just hadn't had the time to develop. You need all of your 20s to develop as an endurance athlete in that sport. You have to put in 7 years of committed training, and I hadn't done it. And when I left the sport, I didn't become inactive. So that was the key. You know, what they call a mountain athlete now. I was a climber and a backcountry skier and a mountain runner. That stuff's really popular now, but I was doing it when I moved to California, and I became very fit, and I did enough local racing that I, you know, learned about, oh yeah, now the skating is happening, and I taught myself how to do that, and I was teaching skiing too, so I was very aware of technique. And anyway, I just went to those races in California and was able to win a national title, and I got noticed.
2 Olympics. Just describe the most memorable part about competing for the, you know, Team USA, representing the country on the international stage like this.
Ooh. So, it's supposedly your athletic career's greatest honor, but the first time I went, I just didn't have enough experience to be there. And because I was the best skier in the country at that point, I was going.
Right.
Didn't matter whether I was ready or not, but yeah. You know, today's athletes, you know, who make the Olympic team, they're racing, you know, national championships as a junior. Then they're going to World Juniors and U23s. And they didn't have any of that. And I wasn't a junior skier. And so by the time they get to the Olympic There are multiple World Cups. I had raced some World Cups and a World Championships. I wasn't ready to be there. So the first time was very intimidating. Second time, I was way more prepared and felt more confident. You know, I kind of knew where I stood in the field and that I had, you know, on a good day where I could compete to. And, you know, that's all you can do is what you have. And so I was like, yeah, I'm able now to access how I've prepared. And unfortunately, the times that I competed in the Olympic Games, the doping was very widespread.
Right.
So we all a little bit took a hit in results. And it just, you know, knowing that that's happening, it kind of leaves a bad taste in your mouth. But you still go and you do your best and you feel really proud to be there. And nothing can take that away. But the whole part about when you come back and people go, oh, you didn't win a medal or this or that. And I'm like, no, but, you know, at that time we were a small skiing nation. And I, you know, I'm like, yeah, we represented pretty well. And I feel that I did my best performances.
Yeah.
So to be top 30, you know, in those races or in the top 20 in World Championships, which I can consistently do. You know, it was a big deal for someone with my background. You know, had I been able to train systematically for skiing all through my 20s, I feel like probably would have had a better performance. But, I put it together for where I was and the person I was at that time and the athlete that I was, and I feel good about it.
Years later, your daughter went to Vates and also competed for the Nordic skiing team. What was that like to be a Vates parent?
So great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So great to see her come here and want to be here. And I think when she first started thinking about colleges, I don't think she was like, I'm not going to do what mom did, but she was already a Nordic skier and she had a lot of opportunities that I didn't have as a kid. I didn't get to Nordic ski like she did as a kid. So, you know, along with other sports and activities that she did, we introduced her to horseback riding and dancing and soccer, you know, all the things. But she picked Nordic. So I was, you know, I felt good about that. But I wasn't counting on her doing that. But, yeah, so it was really fun for her to see her come here and make this her home. And, yeah, and then to be able to go to all those carnivals. We looked forward to it every winter and just come out and do some carnival weekends. And so much fun. And then having Becky Woods as her coach was a full circle.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me. And
daughter of Bob Flynn, who was a legend here at Bates, obviously.
Yeah. We just saw James Upham now over at the at the cage. And so, Bates Nordic is a really strong tradition now. And it was really fun for me to see how much love for the sport and for being on that team that the kids have now. And it wasn't like that when I was doing it because we were a team, but we were not like what it is now. And so it's just so fun to go, wow, look at what they get to do. I didn't get to do it, but I'm so happy for them, you know.
What's your favorite Flynnie story?
Coach Flynn, he was a funny guy, and he would go. So he was not the Nordic coach.
Right.
He was the head ski coach.
Yeah, like of all skiing.
Right.
Yeah.
So Alpine, Nordic, and then he had these younger guys as coaches who were basically just out of college.
Yeah.
And so I always thought that was kind of like, you know, I felt like he was kind of a dad checking on, you know, making sure these squirrely guys were getting the teams where they needed to be.
Right.
So he would kind of float around at the races and I just remember him walking up to the wax bench and he would come over and he'd look everything over and kind of go, I think it's extra blue today for the wax. And, you know, I was like, every single time I'm like, he's going to say it's extra blue, and, you know, and then everyone's going to go, great, thank you, coach, and walk away. And then when someone does well, I told you, you know, he was really proud of his part in that, even though he might have been putting on red clister, it didn't matter. He wanted to feel part of it, and I saw that all the way through his, you know, the end of his career when he was going with Becky to the races, and he'd go to the wax trailer, and he was always looking stuff over and wanting to know, you know, really kind of curious, and But yeah, he's funny. He just had a lot of funny little phrases, and he would tell it how it was. And you know, that was a really terrible day, wasn't it? Or
well, he held on to your All America award for years, right?
He held on to my award until I walked in that door with my daughter in tow. And then he handed it to me, and that was a great moment. It was hanging on his wall. I didn't even know I had an award.
That's so funny. Well, here are thoughts you wanted to share about your time as a Bobcat or this honor of being in the Hall of Fame, part of the first class here?
Oh, I think I said it all today.
You said a lot, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Bates is just the kind of school where opportunities do present themselves, and there's just a lot of chances, and a lot of people believe in you. And had I not had that, I probably wouldn't have followed Nordic skiing and as far as I did in my life. And I just had a lot of really positive influences, and I'm grateful for that.
Nancy Ingersoll Fiddler, Bates Athletics Hall of Fame. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Aaron.
A bunch of home games are on tap this week as the Bobcats return to campus. The swimming and diving teams host Gettysburg for a dual meet Friday at 10 a.m. The squash teams host Connecticut College Friday at 6 p.m. And the women's basketball team opens NASCAC play with a home game against Amherst Friday at 7 p.m. Then on Saturday, the squash teams take on Hobart and William Smith at 11 a.m. And women's basketball hosts Hamilton Sunday at 1 o'clock. Find the complete Bates Athletic schedule by going to GoBatesBobcats.com. And we'll catch you next time on the Bates Bobcast.